Rams, their second year in existence, have won MLS Cup.
Ojo con la alto, wings.
That's our final, Joe Patrick. Welcome to the Tactics Free Zone.
Yeah, oh, hell yeah. I'm down.
The mission
for
is free. You can never leave, though.
Oh no,
you're stuck here.
I kind of like tactics sometimes.
There's water
very
in,
MLS.
In the cooler.
And very it's, MLS to be tactics free.
It's Dasani. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that was the most MLS game that's ever MLS'd. Just about.
Yeah.
I can't remember a more MLS Atlanta United experience overall. It was a whole mess. And one where like, we'll talk about it, but I'm not sure how much we actually learned.
Right.
I'm not sure how much we learned.
Right.
You guys can learn a lot, though, by going to the Patreon, patreon.com/5stripefinal. Go ahead and check that out. Check out Kirk Castle on the intro. The song is Chances.
Yeah,
check out
Kirk
Castle wherever you find music. Thank you, Kurt. Lots of interesting stuff coming up on the Patreon this week. We talked to John Mueller of The Athletic and kind of added another coda to all the discussion we've been having around how much managers matter and everything like that. Of course, a lot of our, and my opinions especially, have been shaped by John, who's been putting together these articles for the last couple of years now on how much the managers actually influence everything. I'm really excited for y'all to hear that one on the Patreon, patreon.com/5stripefinal. Joe, anything else to add?
No, we might not be the last time we reference John Mueller, because I think there's going to be some questions about it when we get to people's questions later on. I think we might discuss them a little bit more because there's been some questions about Pineda and this team defensively, so that's going to be interesting. Also, just wanted to throw out there, I don't know if you know this, Sam, I don't think I've ever told you this. I literally type Kurt's name into a search bar every time. Well, you mix these podcasts, you do the ones that are on the free, and then I do the ones on Patreon, and I literally type his name in every time I edit a podcast because I don't have a template set up, and so I have a file on my computer called like kurtintro.mp3 and it's in my download somewhere, so to find it I just open up the finder and type in Kurt, and then his name pops up, the file pops up. There you go.
What is a legacy in music but living through some guy's search history
right,
on his computer?
Yeah.
That's all you've ever asked for, right, Kurt?
Yeah.
All right. All you guys have ever asked for is just a little more business time. We've got it right now.
It's business time. I know what you're trying to say. You're trying to say it's time for business. It's business time.
Ooh, I think I can genuinely say people actually were asking for this business time in particular.
Yeah.
Joe Patrick.
Yeah.
Because we've got to talk about the fact that Luis Araújo has been sold to Flamengo. At least will be sold to Flamengo very, very soon. Mm-hmm. June 24th, the final date before he heads out. It's kind of weird that we know this already, but leaks started coming out from Brazil. When was this? Was this like Tuesday?
It was the day before they played the last game before Chicago, from what I remember, at least. There probably were reports
before I saw them. It was the day after the game. That's right.
Yeah,
it was the day
after
Colorado, which if you guys want to hear the recap of that we did, that was kind of a whole mess. Go to patreon.com/5stripefinal. Day after, the reports kind of started popping up kind of that night before, early morning, and it escalated very, very quickly from there. Doug Roberson of the AJC confirmed, and then a whole bunch of other folks jumped on it, right? Because that's just how it works. Once one person knows, everyone kind of knows. It's just kind of how it goes. And the team said, you know what, let's just go ahead and get that info out there. This is what's happening. And Luis Araújo on his way to Flamengo very, very soon. But in the meantime, he's going to be with the team.
Right,
he's still playing.
Until then.
Although he's not going to play in the next game because he got a red card for some reason. It's weird. I think it's really weird, to be totally honest.
It is weird. And you know, you mentioned it, his last game or his last day at work is June 24th. And, you know, that's the day they play New York Red Bulls. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, does he play in that? I mean, I assume he does. I assume that's the reason why he's staying until then, is so that he can play in that game. Mm-hmm. But like, do you start a player who's like going to... Everybody knows he's leaving now. I was just it's one of those weird situations where, yeah. And the reason I ask is just like, do you play a player if you feel like he might be going into it, you know, not wanting to get hurt or something so that he can start well at his next club? That's kind of, I think, the where you kind of get, you started to, you know, question these things a little bit, but, you know, it just is what it is.
Yeah. Full credit to Luis for I mean, continuing to put in the effort.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, there's no real reason for him to be out there, to be quite honest. He could have said, "Nah, I'm out. See y'all later."
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would have been totally fair on his part, especially with the deal already being announced. So
and
it's interesting to see.
I have to imagine that there are these situations that play out pretty regularly with players, and it's one of those things where they probably know it's going to happen, but it's not kind of official. And granted, it's not official from either of the clubs as of yet, but it's been well reported at this point, and clearly people who know about the transfer are unafraid to say that it's happening. So it's just interesting that I feel like, you know, players probably go through this kind of thing normally, just but they understand that the public isn't fully informed about what's going on. So there's just like a little interesting dynamic here where the public clearly does know that, you know, time is limited.
It can lead to a lot of questions and a lot of kind of unwanted speculation. Like, the less you know, the more you're allowed to fill in the blanks yourself. And so we're going to kind of cut that out here. I think both parties kind of cut that out, because I think everyone sees this as a win, and including Luis Araujo.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is a chance for him to go back home and be a little more comfortable, and maybe potentially a little more successful in a league that maybe values his strengths a little more.
Totally.
Potentially. Mm-hmm. We'll see. And, you know, it's best for all involved, has been the read I've got on it from literally everyone.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's clearly a great opportunity for Atlanta United to open up that DP slot and let this front office cook. You know, like, that's what we've been saying. It's like, let this new revamped front office, with some of the new processes that they have in place in terms of recruitment and, you know, kind of filtering through the players around the world to find what's really going to suit their team and the kind of team they want to build here, let them, you know, operate as much as possible and get those kinds of players in. So that's why I think it's going to be a really good opportunity for Atlanta United.
They've been building to this one. You know, I think this is something that's kind of been in the works for a while. So I'd imagine that the scouting network is already very much aligned with whatever kind of replacement they want to bring in. I'm sure there's also contingency plans in place for when Thiago Almada leaves as well, that are already being fleshed out. And, you know, I feel, like you said, let the front office cook. I feel better about the processes in place to make those signings more, we'll use Garth's word, efficient and effective.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if they're anything close to Yurgis Yakimakis, here, we're going to talk about some of his numbers in a second. This team's going
to
be real good.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny. It brings me back to when we were talking, I think it was last week, in the Business Time segment, it was Garth Lagerwey stating we're planning to bring in 1 to 3 players. I remember at the time I was like, you know, that's an interesting range to have, you know, of players. And I wonder if it was down to what kind of outgoings are they going to get done. And I don't know if Luis Araujo was one of the ones that he kind of already had in mind, or if there was, you know, more that they could potentially do or planning on. So it's going to be interesting to see how they fill these slots. But they definitely will fill these designated player slots in this window. I can guarantee you that.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about that in just a second, about what the team is actually looking for. But I just want to remind everyone to listen when Garth talks. That's, right, that's all exactly. I'm going to say. Listen when Garth talks, because he values transparency. I think he values transparency in MLS as like a conduit for interest and for fans understanding what's going on. And I think he sees that as somewhat of being a part of like the higher purpose of growing the game in this country. And part of that is being able to play GM. There's some good quotes from his interview with Felipe Cardenas back in February, I think it was, in an Athletic article today, talking about MLS's need to be more transparent about the roster rules and everything like that. It's what you've come to expect from Paul Tenorio and, you know, formerly Sam Stagecall, who are both extremely correct in the fact that, you know, that be way more interesting if we actually knew what was going on instead of me having to create a spreadsheet with like my best guesses. So listen when Garth talks, he's probably telling you something that's pretty true. We talked about it kind of a lot, considering that we've kind of knew that there was a good chance a DP spot would be open this summer.
Right.
We kind of thought it'd be Thiago,
right,
maybe more than Luis. But are you still thinking, are you locked in to DP number 8 over a like for like winger replacement for Luis?
Yeah. So if anybody hasn't heard the Patreon, where we did discuss this a little bit, and apologies, there were some technical difficulties on that episode that was mainly on my end. I was saying that I think that the team will replace Luis Araujo with a number 8. I thought that was going to be more of the majority opinion, but I'm actually a little bit surprised and intrigued by the fact that a lot of people think it should or will be a like-for-like swap on the wing. my feeling is that the team would benefit more from getting in a DP number eight. And then if you can clear up, well, we've always expected, or at least I've expected this team to make a relatively significant signing, like a TAM signing in this window based on money that we're hoping the team's going to be able to free up by getting rid of maybe an Eric Lopez contract or a Marcelino Moreno contract fully to even open up some more room. And then so you can make like a TAM signing as a winger. That's my idea, is to bring in a DP as your box, as your number eight, a TAM winger. To me, I guess that would, well, it would clearly be my preference, but it's hard for me to say right now that that's like clearly the better strategy. I wouldn't be opposed to a DP winger coming in, certainly. I just feel like this team has such a need at that position right now. Maybe a TAM number eight, but with the way that this front office, again, can use their analytics to find the proper player, can bring in a midfielder that's going to be able to really suit the other playmakers in the side well and the attack. But that's just how I feel about it. What about you?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a DP player, and I think it's definitely a TAM player. I think we'll get both in some combination. And the general consensus from roster building folks around the league is that you pay for goals. And in that case, obviously, that's the true. DP would be a winger. But, you know, if you are looking to maximize efficiency and the numbers are telling you that you can get plenty out of a winger on a TAM deal, especially in a system where, you know, I'm not necessarily sure like how critical wingers are to Gonzalo Pineda's system in regards to just outright scoring output.
Right.
You know, I do kind of wonder about that. If they feel they can get the most efficiency out of a TAM DP and still get a lot of production out of a TAM winger, totally possible. You know, weird stuff happens in this league where you're like, oh, that guy's TAM all of a sudden. Hi, yeah. Gareth Bale. You know, like, and I'm not saying they're going to do anything like that. Yeah. It's not the MO of Garth or anyone else in this front office, but it'll be very curious.
Angel Di Maria, I just saw a tweet that his contract talks are breaking down. So maybe a little TAM, like half year contract with Di Maria. One can dream.
Okay. That's interesting. That's interesting, actually. I don't hate that
maybe
at all.
Maybe get him to play with Thiago for the rest of the year, and then, maybe.
You would have that money open the next year, too, as well as you can enter a very important offseason.
Yeah.
That's a fun thought, Joe Patrick.
Yeah, just doing some thought.
Just keep it in your mind.
Yeah, and exactly. Hey, remember, if a midfielders can score, actually. I know a lot of Atlanta United fans might have forgotten that fact. Because there's none that provide anything in front of goal for this team in the last couple years. But you never know. Like, João Paulo, like that kind of player, potentially, you know, can add a handful of full of goals and obviously create a bunch too. So that's the kind of player I have in mind, but we'll see. I'm not going to be necessarily displeased with whatever they come up with. I'm just intrigued to see what their strategy is going to be.
Me too, especially in regards to maybe location, I guess is how I would frame it. You know, the team has trended towards South American players in general, and obviously they're going to still look in South America. I don't think they're like, no, never again. Mm-hmm. We're not going to go to this extremely rich soccer culture and pull players, because that'd be stupid. But, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it is a player from, you know, we have a striker who's from Greece and was playing at Celtic, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's a totally different profile than what we're used to seeing from this team.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't be surprised if it's something similar. Something interesting I want to bring back up again, just real quick, as we think about those DP signings and everything like that and maximizing efficiency, I want to bring back the having success in two countries kind of like corollary tenet of things. Just keep that in mind as well, as we're kind of sifting through and saying, okay, if we're going to spend DP money on a player that is not a young DP, is a full DP, right? Then that's going to be part of it. That's going to play a part, I think, is proven track record across a couple of different countries. So something to keep in mind.
Yep. I think we're almost certain to see that. That's my feeling, at least. Do they have to sign a young DP in order to open up more U22 slots? Is that right? Do you remember those rules?
So two DPs and one young DP equals three U22s.
Okay.
Three regular DPs and no young DP equals one U22. So it would have to be a lot of movement to get the three full DPs. But as long as Tiago's here, you don't have to worry about that.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
We good?
You answer my question. Did everyone grasp that? I have nothing else to say about it. I'm just...
Okay.
I can't keep all these rules in my head. It's too much.
That's why I'm here. That's why I'm paying the totally
so glad you're here.
Minimum bucks.
So glad you're here for that.
All right, Joe, let's go to the segment that earns us all the big bucks. This is Sports Prime Game Time.
Sports Prime Game Time. Sports Prime Game Time. Sports Prime Game Time. Sports Prime Game Time. Sports Prime Game Time. Sports Prime Game Time. Sports Prime Game Time. Sports Prime Game Time. Sports Prime Game Time.
Sports Prime Game Time. Joe Patrick. God. You know, the game with all like the real analysis was probably the Colorado game where we were like, hey, that was really good. We did that on Patreon. Go check that out. This game, there were red cards and goals and whatnot and all sorts of other things that happened. Did we learn anything?
What did we learn? Well, I learned something because I actually did not watch this game on Saturday night. I was at a wedding and I watched it this morning. And when I went to bed Saturday night, I did check the score. And so I knew it was 3-3 and I looked at the, you know, list the scorers and, you know, what time they scored. Did not realize there were any red cards in this game. So when I was watching it this morning and I saw a 26th minute red card, that really changed my perspective a lot on what went on. And I was already feeling a little bit frustrated having seen Chicago score in the 89th minute or whatever it was. So for that to happen on top of, you know, getting what I think a 26th minute red card to Chicago and it still ends up that way. I mean, I think if there's anything we've learned, it's like that. I keep going back to that Yorgos Yakimakis quote that he told us in the locker room a long time ago at this point. But he was, you know, like these little things that teams have to do to be champions. And for me, it's that Atlanta United is just not there yet in terms of this is a game you just have to win every time. If you consider yourself a top, you know, an MLS Cup contender, a top contender, you have to win games in which you are up a man and up a goal in the 26th minute. Like that's basically exactly what happened against Atlanta United when Gutman got sent out, though that was way later in the game. And it really felt at that point like Atlanta United was kind of out of it. Now they did, they weren't, they fought to the end, but it just kind of reinforced that notion to me that Atlanta United just doesn't do everything well enough at this point. Where anyone has any confidence that they are going to get a result, frankly, when that kind of thing happens.
Yeah, no, still learning how to win for sure. And we've seen it a few times this year and I'm not necessarily sure how much that changes until the new personnel gets in. But even still, the standard should be for the folks we already have to at least be able to see this out and not let Chicago immediately score twice after you go up a man and up a goal. It was kind of disastrous in that sense. And just can't happen. It just can't happen. I know that, Joe, in real time with this game, I think a lot of us saw the starting lineup and went, there's some rotation happening here. Brooks Lennon's out. Miles Robinson's out. There's a few other folks not available. So it looked potentially rough from the jump. It looked very much like the Columbus lineup in some sense, you know? But it doesn't excuse the fact that you just can't do all that. You can't have the fluke weird Olympico goal happen. You can't let the kind of, well, executed but still pretty soft goal that Shabilko brings down and you know the whoever scored it blasted in, you know, it's just too easy and it's just so weird, honestly. It's just so weird. It's just like it feels like there are so many obvious things that these guys could do to not allow these things to happen, and yet here we are.
It's very frustrating. It was disappointing for me to see how poor the two center backs were without Miles Robinson. You know, it's like Miles Robinson has been this safety security blanket for so long, since 2018, really, when Frank De Boer inserted him in the lineup as a full-time starter. And you just don't really think about the back line. As long as he's a part of it, you don't really kind of question it or think about it too much. And they've performed relatively well, to his credit. You know, it's a huge credit to Miles Robinson that they have been like that. But last year was obviously a reminder that it's not the same unit without him. And then in this game, I just thought that, you know, well, first of all, this season when Miles Robinson has been out, Juanjo Peralta, to me, has been a worse player. And then when it was evident in this game alongside Luis Abram, where it was just the two players making kind of panicky, rash maybe not rash is not the right word, but it just wasn't as clean at the back. And so often I was seeing either, honestly, it was more Abram than Peralta. Kind of like when the ball came to him, he would kind of like panicked. He'd get kind of panicked and like head the ball like right back into midfield, and where Chicago then have an opportunity to win that second ball and then come right back at him. Juanjo Peralta, obviously, he has a little bit different issues, kind of sorting out his feet at times, especially when he's man marking somebody. And you just, again, you just don't have Miles Robinson to be that kind of fixer at the back for you. So I think that's of a concern. I know we have some people who asked about it that we'll talk about a little bit more in the questions phase. But, you know, when this team has to rotate, you know, it's not great. And we said that early in the season. It's like this team is got a really good starting 11. When all those players are healthy, especially when you add Yorgos Giakoumakis to that group, which wasn't even there at the beginning of the year. But with him and Almada and, you know, all those players, when all those players are healthy, very good. But then when you have to start digging into it, it really weakens pretty considerably.
I am worried pretty considerably about the early returns on Luis Abraham.
I am too.
It has been very Alan Franco,
mm-hmm.
is the way I would put it, you know, in the sense that, like, okay, the mistakes and tendencies that are kind of bad habits are kind of readily apparent, like, from the jump. Like, I don't know if you remember, like, Matt Doyle just immediately saw Alan Franco and went, oh God, that's a disaster. That's one of the worst signings they've made, you know? And I'm not sure we have enough sample size on Abraham yet to really say that, but it hasn't been good. And when you pair that with a player who, you know, has a good physical skill set in Juanjo Peralta and can affect things with his aerial ability on the other side of the pitch, but is just really kind of an average MLS defender, which is not necessarily a compliment, it doesn't trend well. Mm-hmm. It doesn't trend well with your center backs, mm-hmm. you know? And, you know, even still, though, when you get Miles Robinson in later in this game and they allow that ball to bounce around and Katsuya scores at the end there, and it's just kind of like, well, you could have just, you know, not let that happen. You could have just kicked the ball or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, it feels extremely frustrating, kind of defeating, to think about the general state of things defensively for Atlanta. I mean, we're talking about a team that's allowed, what, the second most goals and MLS this year, and part of that is bad luck. The XG kind of reflects that they're more of like an average team as far as the chances allowed.
Mm-hmm.
But then you look at stuff like the post shot XG, Joe Patrick, and see that it's the highest in the league. And what we're saying there is that where the ball is placed when it's on frame, it is more likely to go in against Atlanta United based on the shots that have been taken than
interesting.
Any other team in the league, right? So the shots have been either one, very good.
Yeah.
Or two, very easy, or some combination of both. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Definitely. I think it would indicate, actually, yeah, I didn't even know about that, about the post shot XG. So another way to think about post shot XG is where XG, basically, there's other things that go into it, but primarily it's kind of based on coordinates of where a shot is taken from the field. And that is, you know, strongly determinative of how likely it is to go in. The post shot XG is like, instead of mapping the field, it's mapping the goal mouth, basically, and showing like where it goes in on the mouth. Of course, it's also kind of keeping track of where the goalkeeper is during a phase. So like Yorgos Giakoumakis, I pointed this out to you post game, was like he had a really funny like 0.98 post shot XG on one of that goal where the goalkeeper was out and he scored from the doorstep. But that's just a way to think about post shot XG. And what that to me would say is that Atlanta United is kind of getting just unlucky in terms of the like that teams are really just putting them in the corners against them, and it doesn't help when you have a short goalkeeper in Quentin Vesberg. And like Chicago's second goal, I thought, you know, maybe a goalkeeper with some longer arms maybe gets to that one. I think Quentin Vesberg may have even gotten a hand to it, but I do think his lack of limb length is showing up a little bit. That's hurting Atlanta. But the post shot XG would not even take that into account. That just shows that they're just getting straight up unlucky.
It wouldn't, right? And at the same time, like I want to add that Atlanta's goalkeeping compared to the post shot XG, they've allowed more than anyone else compared to the post shot XG. Are they facing these shots that are really difficult to save when they have the chances to save them, it's not going super well. Atlanta still probably has maybe the worst goalkeeping group than the entire.
And that's how you give up the most goals other than MLS.
And so that's a great recipe to allow. If you're allowing big chances and have bad goalkeeping when those chances and even half chances come up, you're going to allow a lot of goals. Even if for the majority of the game, right, you're still doing a pretty decent job of keeping out a ton of shots and everything like that, right? So it's transition defense. It's allowing the ball to bounce around in the box and give up those soft goals and everything like that. They need to be savages in the box and everything, whatever, right? And it's all got
to
get better.
Yeah, and there's one more I want to point out to one, like, just, you know, flaw that I think this team has, and Doug Roberson pointed this out on his podcast, Southern Fried Soccer. Definitely check that out wherever you get podcasts. But he talked about on Chicago's second goal, while it was, I thought, a good strike and, you know, a decent play between the two, you know, forwards for Chicago, Doug pointed out the lack of pressure on the ball that led to this crossfield switch. And remember, that was something that we talked about actually in preseason for this team. And again, it's preseason, so there's lots of things to take into account there. But to me, it has been somewhat of a consistent theme with this team that they want to play high. They want to play. They want to play with like a higher kind of block. But when you do that, you just have to be pressuring the ball, because if you're not pressuring the ball, then there's going to be gaps. You're pressuring the other team, which means there's going to be gaps wide typically and obviously behind you. So in order for players to not be able to find those passes and pick out those passes and make them, you got to have a man in their face trying to take the ball from them. When that is not happening, then you're going to open yourself up for those kinds of opportunities that like Chicago had on their second goal, and they made the most of it.
Very similar on the third goal as well. Ronald Fernandez just doesn't get out the ball.
And he's kind of in position, but not in position. He's like, he's back, but he's not doing anything. He's like doing the motions of it. He's not affecting the play. Exactly.
So, and generally, I thought he played well again. And I thought he had a really solid game. I think Atlanta's fullbacks in general, that's a very, very deep group for sure. But at the same time, there have been some issues there defensively. It's all kind of compounded by, you know, a midfield that doesn't do a great job of tracking back. It's compounded by some of the issues we talked about already with the center backs. It all kind of feeds into itself. And then once the shot actually gets off, you don't have anyone back there you can really trust to make a match-winning save. You know, and you look across the league at some of the teams that are really successful right now. I mean, even Cincinnati is doing well with their goalkeeper. You have Joe Willis in Nashville. I mean, you have Andre Blake in Philadelphia. I mean, you got all these teams that are like succeeding because they also have match winners. A goalkeeper in Atlanta just doesn't have that. You know, it's something to address.
Eventually, for sure.
Not this year. Sorry.
Probably next. I think they should have a new starting goalkeeper going into next season.
I think it'd be crazy for them not to.
Yeah.
And again, listening with Garth talk, Garth has talked in the past about the striker and the goalkeeper being analytically the most important because they're scoring goals, keeping out goals. I'd imagine there would be an emphasis and a premium put on goalkeeper heading in to next season. Joe, we made it all this way and we're just now getting to Jurgis Jokimakis, the best striker in MLS.
Dude, he is really good. The rounding the keeper, like the way he rounded the keeper and didn't just like very casually just like fired it home with his left foot. Like, I mean, I know the goal was open, but still, just like, yeah, there was like, I was like, oh, that's pretty impressive. That was obviously on his second goal.
Extremely. Give me one moment here, and I'm going to pull up some of these numbers, but I think, like, when I say the best striker in MLS, I don't think I'm kidding right now. Okay, 528 minutes for Jurgis officially this year, with extra time and stuff like that. It's more like 590, something like that.
Yeah.
But most players are hovering around, like, 1,000 minutes, 1,000-plus minutes if they played most of the games this year. Jurgis has 8 goals. That's the second most in the league. The only person ahead of him is Denny Bawanga, who takes penalties for LAFC. If you take the penalties out, he has 9 goals on the season. He's played about 1,000 minutes this year.
Wow.
So in about half the time, Jurgis has scored just about as many goals as the guy who's the front runner for MVP.
That makes me smile. Yeah.
That's pretty impressive. It gets better, though, Joe Patrick. Jurgis is averaging 1.36 goals per 90 minutes. That's about a goal every 65 minutes. Bawanga is at 0.88 goals per 90 minutes. So that's like,
amazing. Like, I mean, like, that's extremely good.
Are you ready for the better news?
Yeah.
It's not a fluke. It didn't seem like it anyway. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the per 90 stuff's going down. You can't be scoring. It's game state, sure, all that kind of stuff. Like, the per 90 stuff is going to go down a little bit, right?
Yeah.
At the same time, in this limited amount of appearances, he's averaging 0.98 XG per 90 minutes. That's almost one goal worth of XG per 90 minutes. That is the best mark in the league by considerable margin. It's the best mark in ASA's database among players who have played more than 500 minutes.
Wow.
For comparison, 2019 Carlos Vela, who still holds, still holds the MLS record for goals and everything like that, 0.93 XG per 90 in 2019. And it's Joseph with 0.87 XG per 90 in 2018. And then you've got Bradley Wright, Phillips, Zlatan, Joseph, Ola Kamara, I don't know why, a bunch of penalties, Joseph Martinez and Tati Castellanos all left on that list. Joseph Martinez was super good at soccer for like 3 years there. he's better than all of those. But Joe Patrick, let me tell you, all of those players took penalties.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when you change it to non-penalty XG per 90, which Yurgos has because he has not taken a penalty with Atlanta United, it's 0.98. The next closest in ASA's database in non-penalty XG per 90 is 2021 Adam Buksa with 0.75 non-penalty XG per 90. So Yurgos like 0.2 better.
Wow.
Per 90.
That's awesome.
Woo, boy. That's absurd. He's doing the damn thing.
Yeah, it makes sense. It checks out though. Like the eye test. Like when you watch him and you like, I just wrote about it. Just funny that you brought up all those stats because I just kind of wrote it casually in my post game column this morning. I was like, he basically gave you a full game's worth of production in 45 minutes on Saturday. I can't imagine what he's going to do in a full game. And to your point earlier, it's like there's game state and other things. It's not going to be like he's not going to be able to double the production necessarily. But man, it's just like when he's on the field, even, you know, you see his teammates come to life. They all want to play. And we talked about this last week when he played after, I think it was after the Colorado game, just about how much, you know, Almada really like all of a sudden starts making more runs and more movement, and there's more space for movement, and because Gigi's also making runs, and there's just so much more going on in that attack as opposed to when Miguel Berry's there. Bless his heart, but like the guy is just not the same quality player. No one would expect him to be. That's why Yorgos Giakoumakis is here. That's why they, you know, paid the money to get him here, and it's just amazing to see it paying off in spades like it has been.
He's real good. He's real good. And again, if Atlanta United scouting department is able to have similar success with the next DP, that's a lot to be excited about.
Yeah. And
it's a lot to be excited about.
You know what I love when I'm going to go back to like how much it seems like Thiago Almada really likes playing with him. You look at the second goal that he scores. It's the one that was initially ruled offside, and he rounds the keeper and scores. And the run that he makes, Thiago Almada sees it perfectly and plays a really nice kind of like reverse through ball, kind of in behind, not through the main channel between the two center backs, but off to the right side of the right-sided center back while he's kind of moving the other way. And that's the run that Yurgos is making. And so, man, it's just a great connection that those two have. And it's the service that Yako likes. You know, it's funny because we talked about him when he first came. It's like he's not very fast, but he's always trying to run behind, remember? And he was having all those offsides early on, and I think we started to see him get a little bit more in sync with some of his teammates. And you know, that goal was a great example of Thiago Almada being able to connect on one of those through balls. Even the Lino didn't think he connected, but sure enough, he was onside. So yeah, it's just great to see. And I even love also, sorry, the first goal. It's like the first goal, yeah, it's just kind of a tap in, but it's not made possible without his presence, the run that he's making into the box. I think he actually wanted it first time directly to him. Thankfully, it didn't come because I think he would have been offside, but the ball goes to the back post. I think it was Etienne on the other side who then lays it back to the middle where he's then there to poke it home. So he can just score in so many different ways. He offers so much. It's great that they've got that position sorted out. Now they can just keep him healthy.
Yeah, it's a big thing, right? And they're doing the right thing. I know everyone's a little frustrated seeing the gradual progression of minutes, but hamstring injuries are so weird. Mm-hmm. You just got to be careful. And it's a long season.
Mm-hmm.
It's a long season. Joe, anything else you want to touch on from Chicago? We're kind of deep into this already.
I mean, I thought Luis Araujo was really poor. Like, I thought he was really bad. that's like one last thing. It's like, I just thought he was, and I will say this. I thought the yellow card, the second yellow, I thought that it was BS. I don't know what the discussion was.
Ridiculous.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Like, so I thought he actually committed a foul in that phase, but it was the initial tackle, which would not constitute a yellow card. And then there was like an imaginary shirt pull or something where then the Chicago player sold it so well. Yeah.
He almost like jerked his back and then like immediately raised his hand. Yeah. You know, it was all the motions to pull off the shirt pull, and it just wasn't that at all. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
So I think, definitely I wonder foul, if it might get appealed. I wonder if they might appeal it. I think it's worth appealing. I don't know whether it gets overturned or not, I guess, is a different question.
I think so too. I think we'll ask Gonzo tomorrow. Well, who we talk to tomorrow? I don't know who we talk to tomorrow, but we'll ask someone for sure to see if they're appealing. And hopefully get that
someone with
out.
Knowledge of the situation.
Yes, exactly. Sources say. I had some moments where I actively said out loud, I don't think I'm gonna miss him.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's mean. I think that's just kind of the reality of the situation. There were a couple moments, and I can't remember in particular what they were. Just misplaced passes, just kind of not well-intentioned passes, not thoughtful passes is what I would call it. And it was not good.
Yeah.
Not good.
Can I add one more thing real quick before we get to the break, which is I thought Franco Barra was really good in this game. I think that he almost like creates chances with his defensive actions, like, because he's doing them in such aggressive places on the other in the opponent's side of the field that he can just like make a tackle and all of a sudden Atlanta's on a break if they pick up that second ball. So I thought he was good. He's going to, of course, serve a yellow card accumulation suspension, which is unfortunate.
Oh, no.
We'll talk about that in a bit. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting
We can talk about it now. That's super not great. Yeah. Fortunately, Orlando's not fantastic or anything like that. I don't think Atlanta's necessarily going to get overrun on Saturday or anything, but I mean, they might, similar, but that is a bummer to have him out again. He just can't seem to really get any momentum going. I thought it was interesting how they'd kind of deployed him, though. It seemed to be a single pivot, and that seemed dangerous to me. And, you know, I'm interested to go back and see. I'm interested that you were happy with that defensive performance, and I'm not like doubting it or anything like that. It's just that I thought there was still a lot of space in midfield.
It's a good point you bring that up,
because
I think you're right.
They were asking Franco to cover a lot of ground.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And so,
because I was pleased with like some of the aggressive places where he was, but then also you're definitely right that there were places where he wasn't as well.
So that's part of the thing. When you structure him in a double pivot, he just has less ground to cover.
Right,
and when you get onto a Barra Island, you're in for a lot of pain. But if you go around a Barra Island, you're doing great.
Yeah.
And the single pivot kind of allows that space to be there, because Mateus Asetu is just not going to get back in that way. You know, and it also makes build-up tougher. I think I'm just not quite sure I understand the process behind that. This is something I want to ask about as well and get a better understanding of why that was the case.
Yep.
You know, continues to be curious to me why Atlanta chooses a single pivot sometimes. All right, Joe. Not curious to me why we're going to take a quick break. We've been talking too long.
Not curious to anybody who's been listening to this podcast for a long time, because if you've been listening, you know that this episode of Five Stripe Finals is presented by Lucid FC. That's Lucid Footwear and Clothing, not football club, footwear and clothing. They're local. They've got a shop in Buckhead. They're the owners, twins. They live here. They've gotten a shop open by appointment and walk-ins 1 to 8 p.m. daily. It's located at 3209 Paces Ferry Place. They also have a website called lucidfc.us. If you go to that website, you can look at a lot of clothes and accessories and all other kinds of things. That's like urban streetwear, European inspired, I would say. So it's got a lot of cool stuff, definitely artistic. And if you're into that thing, definitely check them out. You can get free shipping within the United States if you use DSS as your promo code when you're at the checkout page or whatever. So definitely do that at lucidfc.us. Check out everything they've got on offer.
Looking at the spring set, it's very cool. I like they got a spell out tee there with some like beige and light blue. They did a good job with that. Good job, Lucid. We're proud of you guys. Keep it up.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Listeners, you guys keep it up as well. These questions are pretty good, he said before having actually read them. I'm sure they're great. I'm sure you guys nailed it. We're going to nail it too as we work through them. GoJD says, we're not going to nail it. No, nope. Stumbled on the first one. All right. Regroup. GoJD says, should we be more disappointed in that result because the opponent had no sponsor on their shirt? Yeah, that's a bummer. Look, Chicago. Chicago is rough. Chicago's rough. They're not completely terrible, but they've given Atlanta kind of some special kind of fits this year. It's curious to see exactly why. I guess it's been a pretty basic setup. It's a mid-block, 4-4-2. We talked about it after the Chicago game a couple weeks ago, where, you know, once the ball gets to the wings, that's the trigger. So Gutman, Lennon, whoever's over there, they were focusing pretty hard on that. And Atlanta, when it was 11-11, Atlanta was having a little bit of trouble working through that, just about the same way they did in the first game. Of course, then it got weird, and so nothing mattered tactically, and nothing really mattered at all. It was a totally nihilistic game, but it was curious to see that, and I'm kind of scared that other teams with sponsors who are actually like good are going to employ a similar setup, and it's going to cause some problems.
Yeah. Chicago's shirt, it's just like the nameplate, or like the space for it's just so, it's so out there. And it's like, you know, it's like, come on, come sponsor me. It's so striking, but yeah, that never, it's never a good look. And yeah, I don't like this whole like Chicago having their way with us.
It just looks so clunky. I'm curious to see what kind of adjustments they make to teams doing similar things. Because if you mark out the six, especially in that single pivot with Ibarra, you know, and he has to work through traffic and turn and deal with the space and everything like that, and somehow progress the ball to Osetu, who's just going to pass it right back to him. It doesn't seem ideal, does it?
No, it doesn't. But I will say, so, I thought Almada was kind of having... He at some point it kind of clicked for him, and he started finding a lot of space, just kind of running circles around Chicago's midfielders. But that was kind of that, now that I think about it, seems like that was mostly after the red card happened, although he also did basically force the red card as well. So
him and Miguel Barry.
Oh, was it Barry who was fouled on
don't
the
lose out on,
Barry
don't
was
lose
fouled
out on
the,
Barry.
Okay, yeah. I'm out of the first
giving him enough
card.
Credit, I don't think. He did enough.
Man, I'm just
a Miguel
Barry hater right recently.
Wes the Woodstock Lurker says, what needs to happen for Etienne to get some positive outcomes in a game? Reward the runs? Let him have space on the side to cook? I would really like to see some of those runs rewarded a little more often. I know he isn't fantastic on the ball necessarily, but he is putting in the runs a lot of times, and I am seeing that ignored somewhat regularly, and it's kind of frustrating. It's almost like, oh wait, the wingers can do that and the players don't really know how to handle it sometimes. And you know, even Thiago Almada sometimes, I guess, do they mad at each other? Do they need to make up? Like, it's interesting. It's a very similar problem that we've seen on the left side from folks like, remember Ezequiel Barco would just like never pass the ball to George Bello for like literally no reason. You know, he would make the run and it just would never happen. Mm-hmm. It's just something that needs to be rewarded more often. And I think eventually things will come good for Etienne in the sense of like, okay, this is a decent MLS player that's making an impact on this game.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I can't think of many times off the top of my head where Etienne has received a ball where he's on that run, which he's making. I agree. I can't remember many times where he receives this. I'm trying to think of like where he's receiving a ball kind of like on like a long diagonal or even vertically up the field where he's just getting those opportunities. So I don't think he's been, again, set up very well. I know that when, especially I think it was Gonzalo Pineda talking to you about the positive body position or the positive body shape that he's in when he gets the ball in the final third, and how the team, it's not just Etienne, it's the team kind of playing a part in finding him in the best way where he can then go forward and make those positive runs that I've been, not positive runs, but like positive actions with the ball, positive meaning like going towards goal, making a goal threat happen when he receives the ball. So yeah, it's just, it has been frustrating. I understand the frustration that people are having with it, but I'm with you. I still think it's there for him to find. It's just taking some time.
So I went back and looked today, and we talked about this in Discord, at an article I read about Etienne Jr. Talking about what he would bring to Atlanta United. This is on thestriker.com. Please go check that out. And we were talking about like why this breakout year happened. Like before last year, his numbers weren't necessarily outstanding in any year that he had been playing, but he jumps up to 9 goals and 6 assists last year. And he jumps up in particular, I think, because he started to figure out how to get the ball in the box and maybe even just start to get rewarded for making runs in the box. In the 2021 season, where he was like 1 goal, 5 assists, he finished in the 68th percentile in touches in the attacking penalty area per 90.
Yeah.
The next year, in 2022, is the breakout year. Again, 9 goals, 6 assists. He finishes in the 96th percentile in touches in the attacking penalty area, right? And this is a guy who was 11th in the league in what second spectrum defined as runs challenging the back line. So he was making those movements,
yeah.
But it seems like Columbus was rewarding him for it.
Right.
You know,
right.
He was getting into those positions and touching the ball a lot. And it doesn't seem like that's clicked in Atlanta for some reason. And I'm unsure why.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really have a good answer for that, but I do want to just kind of explain that's why things maybe haven't been clicking.
That's really, really good context to have. I think that will, I mean, that certainly makes me feel better.
I kind of want to pull up his numbers right now and see what those are. I do want to ask you while I'm doing that.
Sure.
What kind of winger profile do you think we're looking at for Luis Araujo replacement? Because I kind of think a very similar player to Etienne would maybe work a little better in the sense that you would have a couple runners to kind of play around Yakimakis and Almada.
Yeah, I agree. And that's why I'm kind of more on the preference of using a DP spot on a number eight, because I feel like potentially you can find a TAM player who is more of a off-ball runner type, a guy who can provide width, who can get crosses in and be that kind of wide provider for a striker like Yorgos. And even some, you know, even the, you know, Etienne maybe cutting in on his right foot from that left side, as opposed to a player like Luis Araujo, who's also cutting in on the left foot from the right side. I feel like Atlanta United has found themselves getting congested sometimes when they've got those players coming into those spaces all together. So that's one of the reasons why I've kind of been a little bit more preferential to the DP money being slotted in at the midfielder role. But, you know, you never know. You never know what the prices of these kinds of players are going to be. But, yeah, I mean, like a Tito type, you know, that'd be great. That's what we've been saying for a long time. Of course, it's a lot easier said than done to find a player like Tito was in the way that he was able to produce for Atlanta United, which was, you know, among the best wingers in MLS history.
There is something extremely weird going on with Derek Etienne Jr.
What's that?
So, the touches in the attacking penalty area have gone down,
mm-hmm.
but only a little.
Really?
Only a little. He's 87th percentile. He's 96th last year. Progressive passes received, he's 73rd percentile this year. Last year, he was 76th. So a lot of some of the indicators of like, okay, he's getting into decent positions, at least on a very like base level, are still kind of there. But then you look at like the non-penalty XG, Etienne was 86th percentile last year. He's 1th. He's 1th percentile this year. So something is happening in that kind of disconnect where wherever Etienne is receiving the ball, he's either just not getting into the box anymore with it, or there's just too many people in front of him. He's facing a low block more or something that is keeping him from getting off shots and being more active. It's very strange.
You know,
I'm going to have to write about this.
Yeah. That is really interesting. Or maybe it has to do with who's playing at striker when he's been playing. It seems to me that he's like there's been a lot of Miguel Berry games when Derek Etienne has played on the left wing. He hasn't played as much
Miguel
with
Berry games. Someone did the math on this in the Discord. Something like 350 minutes with Yorgos this year for him and Etienne together.
Okay.
But a few of those have been just like substitute appearances.
Yeah. So maybe that has something to do with it. But I don't know. That is very interesting, though. Seems like an outlier either way.
I don't know if it means he's going to come good or not.
Well, I mean, I think that there's probably something in between what last year and this year that he can start to produce at.
I think so. It is funny going back and reading that article, though, and being like, you know, if Atlanta keeps this somewhere close to around 175K like he was making last year, it seems like it'd be a really great fit. He's on TAM.
Yeah. Was it like 657, something like that?
Yeah, 651. Plus the 25K extra, so he's on 676, which was the max you could offer a free agent. And I really like Derek as like a person, player, everything like that. And I was one of the people like saying, hey, do this. You know, but I'm just not sure. He certainly hasn't lived up to that value yet.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm curious why Atlanta felt the need to give him that max deal in the first place. I'm not sure other teams would have necessarily been offering the same. Just a thought. Just something to keep in mind.
Mm.
Pineda Head 17 says, with the absences for next week against Orlando, what kind of lineup would you run out there with Lennon at right wing with Hernandez behind him work, leaving Chol on the bench? And Ralph says, does Diop start versus Orlando? Yeah, it might be Clément. It might be. Quentin's a great guy, but the shot-stopping numbers have kind of been what they've been. Been what they've been.
But the distribution.
Any other thoughts on goalkeeper? Yeah. Yeah. There were a couple of moments where Quentin was just not good distribution-wise either.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Oops.
Honestly, not to get into too much of like the whole like drama, but I do wonder if that Instagram post might have worked against Diop. I don't know. But I can't imagine. If I were Pineda, that would annoy me if a player like comes out and like kind of not only openly like is upset with the decision that you've taken, but then like kind of mocks you as for the reason why.
Mm.
Whether your reason was legitimate or not, it was the reason that you gave. And so I don't know. I wonder. I would say if Pineda does start him, it says a lot about Pineda that he's willing to look past that kind of thing. But I think, yeah. I don't know.
I haven't asked about the response to that yet. I might do that soon. But generally, Pineda has been one of those people who just understands
he frustration rolls
from players.
Yeah.
You know, so I doubt it would affect things
too
much. As far as everything else, Luis is out. Caleb's gone. I think those are the two biggest absences.
Ibarra's out. Cursive Kid also asked if Sosa is injured. Was Sosa on the bench for this one? I didn't even see.
I don't think he was.
I know he looked like his ankle was pretty swollen after the Colorado game. So if Sosa's injured and Ibarra suspended, who babysits Rosetto?
Oh, God. Uh-oh.
I mean, and apparently,
the only one left.
Sadich was out with a calf. Are we going to get Brooks Lennon midfielder?
Finally, my three-year plan come to fruition.
Tony, yeah, by the way, Tony, we can just throw this one in here. Tony Commander said, hear me out. Gutman in midfield, talk amongst yourselves. So there's also that.
That is definitely following.
What
the
is
same the,
how do you construct? How do you construct this midfield without Santiago Sosa, Franco Ibarra, and Amar Sadich?
They would roll with Fortune, most likely, I think, and that's a big test for a very young player, but a player who's been receiving some praise. But I mean, that didn't quite follow the 9+2 rule, does it? For putting a Johnny out there, I think that would be a little well beyond 9+2. It'd be a really tough spot. But your hand might be forced. The Gutman in midfield thing is funny because it's following the same logic I've used for Brooks in midfield, which is just go cover some ground and make some shit happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
You're decent technically.
Anyway.
Right.
Yeah. And I think it just shows how starved we are for like athleticism.
Yes.
In midfield.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
You know,
right.
We're all like, you know, maybe.
Yeah.
So
that'd be fun. Yeah.
It would probably be a disaster, but then again, who knows? Would be a tough
Don't
task.
Knock it till you try it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Or a total shift in formation in general.
Okay.
Know.
So so if we're gonna go with like a 4-3-3 with Fortune, Rosetto, and Almada as the three midfielders. I think you bring Miles Robinson back in, probably for Luis Abram. Go with him and Peralta again at the back. And then you go Ronald Hernandez at right back and Brooks Lennon at the right wing. At right wing?
I think so. I mean, I
think that's what I would
do. To be totally honest, he's so much more effective as a sub.
Yeah, I totally agree. I would not want to start Chol. And
so,
yeah.
Just let Brooks get in, start bombing some crosses to GG. Let's ride.
Bombing the crosses. Let's go. Yeah. All right. I think we sorted it.
We solved it. You're welcome.
And GG should start, obviously.
And yeah,
should
I
be
think,
ready to go.
I think it feels like the progression should be at the point to where he's good to go.
Went 45 minutes. Now he's got the full week. Yeah. And he probably goes 60 minutes.
He literally
minutes.
Did like 20, 30, 45. Like you can see the clear progression.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of strikers, Chris's Kid says, do you think we sign a backup forward, the DP striker, and USL level backup combo is too big of a drop-off even for an MLS roster? I just don't think there's the space.
Yeah.
I don't know. They need help there, but I'm just not sure that's within the roster building structure for this season. Talk to him in the offseason, though, when some bad contracts are cleared again. I think you might have some space there. But then again, they might. They might, because Miguel Berry clearly is he's doing... We talk about this a lot, but are you doing your primary job in your position? Like, same with goalkeeping. You need to stop shots before we worry about your distribution. Mm-hmm. Same with defenders. You need to play good defense before you worry about your ability to pass out of the back. Miguel Berry, are you getting touches in the penalty area and getting shots on goal? And you're just not. You're just not. You're doing everything else great. He's doing everything else really well. I love his pressing. I like some of his movement off the ball, you know, but it's not resulting in shots. It's just not.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, it's a great point where would you like to fill that slot? Yes, but it's just so hard to find that player. And I don't know off the top of my head where you would or how you would do it. So it's, yeah, it doesn't strike me as being a priority for this team. Pretty simply. If you saw me looking down my phone there, Sam, I was looking at Jackson Conway's numbers, and I just don't want to believe what I'm seeing on FotMob, the app, soccer app that I use. So I wanted to try to corroborate it with something that I know is a little bit more
is he killing
accurate.
It?
Oh no. Okay. No. I hate to say that these are accurate numbers. So he's got 7 appearances and he's played 43 minutes across 7 appearances
for Phoenix Rising of the USL.
Yeah. He has 8 okay. accurate passes. He has no shots on target. He has one. No, hold on. Yeah, he's 1 red card. So things could be going better for old Jackson. I feel bad.
Yeah, that's extremely rough. Yeah. I mean, he was doing better with the 2s. Yeah. And the 2s were not a good USL team.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not good news. That's not good news. So, well, there's that option out the window. Mm-hmm. Sorry, y'all. Cinco Reyes says, I did the math, and here are historical goals allowed per game. I can't read, y'all. My South Georgia accent just kills me sometimes. 2017, 1.18 goals allowed per game. 2018, 1.29. 2019, 1.26. 2020, 1.30. 2021, 1.09. 2022, 1.59. 2023, 1.71. We talked about some of the things kind of contributing to that. And, you know, it's clearly not good. There is some bad luck involved, though.
Mm-hmm.
The 2022 one, we can explain that away with league-worst goalkeeping just about mm-hmm. and a whole lot of injuries. This year, I think it regresses to the mean eventually as far as expected goals allowed and everything like that. But there are clear issues, and I think everyone understands that those need to be fixed.
Yeah, no doubt. And this is where I was going to, you know, shout out John Mueller, and make sure you listen to that episode if you're a patron to Five Stripe Final. If you're not, go to patreon.com/5stripefinal. But we kind of talk about this exact thing, and I thought it was interesting that Cinco Reyes says himself. He says, I get injuries last year, and Pineda's squad only allowed 11 goals in 13 matches when he took over in 21. So it is interesting that, like, in 2021, when Gonzalo Pineda takes over, they have amazing defensive record. Granted, they had a pretty good good defense record even before he took over too, and it's obviously gone downhill since then. But yeah, you say last year you obviously have the issues with Miles Robinson and Brad Guzan, among other goalkeepers, and then this year is just the one where it's most striking as an outlier. But we talked about it at the top of the show. You talk about the post shot XG, talk about some of these things that they've been going up against. I think a lot of it makes sense that doesn't really point at Gonzalo Pineda being the issue. It seems to be more about the players he has available to select, and maybe there are some tactical things, but it's just not it's just not necessarily on him.
We do such a weird job as a soccer watching community of ascribing things to coaches and then not ascribing things to coaches. With, I don't think, really understanding what coaches actually, like, do. You know, mm-hmm. when Atlanta United leads the league in set-piece goals, you know, no one really goes, oh, great job, coaches. great work. Although yeah, exactly. They do play some part in that, yeah. Like designing those, you know. But the main thing here,
and Atlanta's like the best in the league out of this year, by the way.
Incredible, right? Yeah. So, but when the center backs aren't that great, you know, and the defending just isn't all that great, people go, "Well, this is the coaching. This is on them." And it's weird. It's weird how we kind of dissociate those things. Mm-hmm. And just
I think it's it's because you want there to be an answer as to why things are not happening, mm-hmm. are not happening on the field. But it's just not that clear, you know. Like that mm-hmm. the last goal the Chicago scores, we talked about it. It's like Ronald Hernandez not necessarily pressuring. I bet you Gonzalo Pineda would have liked him to be pressuring the ball a little bit more in that situation.
Yeah. If Gonzalo Pineda is playing like, FIFA, no, he's don't... putting Ronald Hernandez out there, you know?
Yeah. Yako is also marking a guy on the back post who he lets get by him when there's a flick on, which greatly impacted that goal as well. So, yeah, there's these things that go into it that is just... I wish it was as simple as just looking at the manager, too. And I'm not saying that Cinco Reyes is necessarily saying this either. I think we're all just trying to figure out exactly what has led to this 1.71 goals per game that Atlanta is conceding right now.
Hey, a super related question here from ATL Greg 1. If Miles leaves, is there even one suitable starting center back on the roster right now for 2024? I don't think the answer is yes.
Yeah, it's hard to see it. It's hard to see it unless you can get some amazing center back in that can kind of make Peralta look like he does against... when he's playing alongside Miles. But even then, I'm not like super sold on Peralta, honestly, as a starting.
I don't think Peralta's back next year, to be totally honest.
Yeah. He's still on loan, I guess, this year, right?
Yeah. And I don't think they're going to activate any kind of clause or anything to keep him around.
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't. I wouldn't
unless the plan is for him to be the third or fourth guy, which I'm generally okay with. I think Peralta's on what, like 300K or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's not crazy for a third choice center back. So something to keep in mind there. Abraham may come good. It's not the craziest thing in the world for a player to be slow acclimating and everything like that. Yeah. His numbers in Liga MX last year were pretty miserable. Yeah. And I think there's kind of been reasons he's been moved around. Yeah, I don't know. It was interesting to see Peru's national team coach in the building on...
Oh, is that right?
Friday.
He was at Mercedes-Benz Stadium?
He was at Marietta. He was at Marietta.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
On folks. And yeah, I kind of wonder if... I'm sure that was part of like normal visits, but I do wonder what the conversations were like with Luis Brom in that case. Mm-hmm. Just wonder if Luis is doing okay adjusting. I'm not sure. Yeah. I'm not sure. It wouldn't be the craziest.
Well, I mean, honestly, you know, for a national team manager, like they want their players getting playing time, and he's like not really doing enough to earn that playing time right now, frankly. So for a center back, that just even makes it even harder because you kind of need some of those matches to get in a little bit of a rhythm so the game doesn't feel like it's going so fast. But if you're Pineda, it's hard to justify putting him out there unless there's some sort of injury right now. So it's a tough one. Maybe he can turn around. Hopefully he can. I sure hope he can.
All right, Joe. I don't think we need to keep going any further than we've gone with this. Anything else you want to add before we get out of here?
Nope. That's it.
Cool. Check out Joe on 92.9 The Game. Check out Dirty South Soccer. Check out me on thestriker.com. Check out the Patreon, patreon.com/5chartfinal. Check out all those things. We're doing a good job everywhere we are because we're good at this. Cool?
Yes.
Cool. All right. Let's get out of here. Bye, all.